You're listening to Innovation for Alpha, where we explore everything at the intersection of healthcare innovation and finance. Through our discussions and interviews, we keep you informed and educated about healthcare innovations, next-level venture investing, and everything involving the combination of the two.
Hi, everybody. It's Tobin Arthur back with Innovation for Alpha. And I am working with two really interesting entrepreneurs today, Dr. Jordan Ritchie and Dr. Adam Robison, who are building a company called AI Medica. And I'm very excited about this because I have decades of experience in EHR and practice management systems. So I love talking to entrepreneurs who are doing something very clever in the space. So guys, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Tobin. It's great to be here.
Well,
thank you, Tobin.
You bet. And let's take just turns. Jordan, why don't you start off and just talk a little bit about your background, and then why don't you follow up with that?
Of course. So I began in kind of life sciences. I was always into biology, genomics, genetics, led me into the bioinformatics space. I kind of discovered the overlap of biology and computers, and just fell in love with it. I worked for a small startup early on in my career called 2Genomics. We did bioinformatic analysis for rare genomic diseases. I was with them for a little while, and then I spent some time at Myriad Genetics. So I got a bit of I got some software exposure. I did as a software developer there. So I have a technical background that I then turned and decided to go back to school, went to get my PhD, completed my PhD at the Medical University of South Carolina in biomedical informatics and data science, and discovered, you know, that the overlap of computers and biomedical data was even more interesting and amazing than just bioinformatics and genetics and genomics, and, you know, expanding it out to all the data that you could find in an electronic health record system and all the public data sets that are available out there through research. And this really became, you know, precision medicine informatics, which is my love and passion. I love that space. So graduated and promptly met Adam, Dr. Robison, who's here with us, and he had founded AI Medica. I'll let him talk about that a little bit more in a minute, but I think he just got to a point where his clinical and administrative responsibilities were heavy enough. He's like, I don't need to run this company too. And so he and I connected where I wanted to be, what I wanted to be doing, and here we are. And it's been great.
Nice.
Thanks, Jordan. My name's Adam Robison. I am a physician by training. I did my training at the University of Louisville for both my medical school and residency, and started practicing in a small community hospital in Idaho, where I currently practice still. I currently work professionally as a clinician for the San Luis Health System. And it was during my time working as a physician for the last decade, I've seen the evolution of EHRs as I've been on different health systems and used different formats of them. And I'd always come back to the same problem: was we have all this data in the EHR, and there's all these parts of workflow that should have been automated, or I would expect to be automated given where the data is in the EHR, and how I'm like, why is this provided to me? Why am I having to do so much manual extraction? And it all culminated in a day where I'm sitting on at the EHR going, having tried to put together some risk scores for a patient. And I'm having to take my phone out, put this information directly in my phone. And I'm going, why this process seems so silly, especially with how fancy these EHRs and all things they can or potentially could do. Why am I doing this process this manually? And so I worked with our IT department and to see if there's something I could do internally, like, hey, can we do this with the, and we quickly realized that at least with our understanding at that time, it was not feasible to do this kind of automated contextual system where you're looking at different cues in the EHR that output certain things, all automated. And so based on that experience, I decided to take some money out of my pocket and build some code with some developers and hire some developers to see if we can make something out of it. And it's been an amazing experience the last few years. We've been doing this to bring this product to the table and to the market now, which we have, where we are now, you know, fixing a problem that it's been fun to see it as a problem that impacted me directly. And now I'm able to use it in my practice here soon. So
I love it. It's great background and really interesting background with the two of you combined. Adam, talk a little bit about the you know, your experience as a practitioner, from what I hear from most physicians, they come to feel like EMRs are really just a charge capture system more than they are a clinical support system, which, you know, was obviously what everybody wanted to see out of EHR. Has that been your experience, you know, both personally as well as your peers?
Yeah, I mean, so I clinically work as a hospitalist, an acute inpatient physician, but I am also the chief hospitalist for the health system. So I oversee 120 providers that are all hospitalists across four different campuses. And yeah, that's been their experience. Everybody sees the EHR as a barrier to patient care as opposed to a tool that could augment their ability to provide care. I'm trained as an internal medicine physician, so we use a stethoscope. It's a part of my outfit, and it's a part of my tool I use, like a hammer would be for a framer. You know, something I have to use every day. And I've always been frustrated that the untapped potential of the EHR. The EHR should be something, as in, at least in modern medicine, that should be used to augment my practice instead of being a barrier right now. And that's kind of where we like to see, and that's where we want to help develop tools at AI Medica to help make the EHR an augmented experience to help the physician provide information in the right time for them to then provide the care they need for their patients. So not digging through all this garbage in the chart. Because right now EHRs have basically become, as your point, glorified charge capture machines, or which they don't do a great job anyway at that, but that's what they're potentially supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And every physician sees it that way. So if it becomes this thing that like we already feel kind of yucky about trying to optimize coding capture, which none of us care about.
Yeah.
And it's taking away from my ability to care for patients, which is how it's basically being seen right now. So helping to kind of flip the script on how EHRs are being seen, how they're being used.
So you guys have both talked about the power of data, and, you know, we're big believers in that, you know, the saying that data is the new gold. And, but the challenge, it seems to me, and part of the rub has been that many of these systems, while they may talk about being open, you know, open systems, are not. And in fact, hospital systems and others, in many cases, have a disincentive to make their data accessible. Now there's some powerful forces pushing against that. So talk about what your experience has been in terms of being able to extract data from where you need it and then starting to put it into, you know, meaningful formats for the physician to take action against that.
That's a great question, Tobin. The interoperability landscape is a really interesting one because, you know, there are large sectors in the market that have, you know, don't struggle with interoperability the way that healthcare does, right? The banking sector, e-commerce, air travel, there's all of these, you know, large internet-based economies that you don't hear interoperability discussions happening very frequently, right? But in healthcare, we really struggle with it. And it's not a technological problem, right? This is definitely a political business problem. And what people didn't appreciate when we created electronic health records, we really created a monopoly, right? Where we sort of said, okay, we're going to, you know, the government mandated that everybody put everything into an electronic format, but then they didn't put any guardrails around how that data would be shared and how it would interact across hospital barriers. And hospitals, at the end of the day, or these health systems, are businesses, and they have to protect their gold, as you put it, right? Their data. And so you can see how there's a very strong incentive for these hospital systems to keep their data close to the vest, even despite some of the government pressures to share it. For us, it's been really interesting because we're so focused on building tools that deliver value to the physician and the patient. It allows us to build tools around relatively, because it's not complete, but relatively complete data, right? We're looking at an encounter for a patient comes in and sees the physician, and that set of data is relatively intact, right? And so when we're applying calculators and risk scores and in the automated fashion that Adam has described, our interoperability need is actually quite low, which allows us to kind of dodge that interoperability problem, at least initially. I'm sure we'll come up against it as we begin to do some bigger things. But right this second, we've been able to take that encounter data that's largely complete and provide significant value back to the provider by automating a sticky part of the clinical workflow, and also providing value to the patient by helping push these risk scores and the recommendations based on those risk scores to the physician so that they can more consistently and efficiently treat their patients.
Good answer. Let's dive a little bit into the business itself, because we have a couple of objectives in terms of the business. One is the company's raising money. We're going to talk about that here in a bit. And you're also beginning to load clients. And so I want to get into what is that client, you know, ideal client look like. So you have mentioned you've got, you know, implementation or integration with Epic so far. You can do the same with Cerner without a whole big lift.
That's right.
You haven't gotten there just yet, but talk a little bit about what you've done to date and kind of the state of the union, so to speak, and then we'll get into what's the next 6 to 12 months look like.
Sure. Adam, do you want to talk about St. Luke's? And I can talk about some of our other prospects.
Yeah, so right now we have integrated this software into the St. Luke's Health System, which is the largest health system in the state of Idaho. It's, you know, solely well-defined. They've got about 10 hospitals, 1,600 physicians that are employed by the health system. So that's been, you know, we're right at the early stages of people using it. So we don't have a lot of usage data, but we will have that soon. But so far, the response to that has been very positive. And we've got other tools that we'll be launching there soon as well that will hopefully, you know, move the needle on some other pieces of clinical care that we're excited to talk about. But yeah, right now it's been pretty well accepted, and people are starting to use tool and liking it.
Hey, let's use them as an example, just in terms of giving people a little clarity around the model a bit. So that's a good size client, you know, to out of the gate. What was the entry point? You know, who was it that you were dealing with primarily to make that decision? And then now that you're implementing and integrating, you know, who are you dealing with on a regular basis there? Give us a little sense of that.
So we were working with initially was the chief medical information officer and the chief information officer, who are typically, those ones are usually gatekeepers for that type of those type of decisions on software implementation. And we've been talking to those type of people at other institutions as well. So those are usually the individuals you're working with. After those decisions are made and they greenlit it, they see there's a clinical use case as well as an, you know, there's not a huge technical lift or something they can do technically. And then we're offloaded to, you know, a specific program project manager that manages the project from there on out. So that's kind of how the typical, and that's kind of been somewhat consistent amongst all the hospitals we're talking with and in various stages of conversation with them.
And is it fair to assume that St. Luke's is an Epic shop?
Yeah, they're an Epic shop.
So What is the use of AI Medica from the physician's standpoint? What does that look like? Am I opening up an AI Medica app on my tablet, my phone, my computer? Or how's that? What's that? What's going on there?
So it integrates directly into the EHR, which is, okay, you know, something that's, it was just, if you're familiar with Epic, they have tabs for different parts of your workflow, and it's just an additional tab that's put out there. You click on it, and then it launches the app, the software, as a web browser window that directly integrates with the EHR, has a patient's name up there that the data is being, the chart is being pulled from, and then it gives you, and the app itself is all, you know, you can navigate, pull whatever calculators you want, but it will pull over all the, it'll automate all the workflow for you. So you don't have to search for anything. It will just pull over. An example would be if a patient had atrial fibrillation, we commonly like to calculate something called a CHADS VAS score to see if the patient should be on a blood thinner. Yep. It's a use case. So if the problem list says the patient had been diagnosed with atrial fibrillation, then the catheter will already know to run all the appropriate scores for that patient's problems. So any diagnosis that's already been there, it appropriately applies all the pertinent catheters for that patient and gives you the outputs. So the power of that type of tool is when new information comes out and new stuff has been discovered, or more new descriptions of patients' problems or diagnoses are discovered, we can easily put that into the tool and then give a health system. You don't have to do any training. You just instantly go, oh yeah, your patient has disease X, and now we want to stratify this patient and treat him with these guidelines based off the score. So we can do it very easy and seamlessly now.
And then is the pricing schema on some kind of a per user monthly basis, or how have you set that up initially?
Yeah, that's a great question. We're early enough. We're still kind of testing the market a little bit on some of the pricing scheme there. But Initially, you know, behind the scenes, we do our math and calculation on a per seat basis, and then we turn that into a per hospital per year pricing scheme that hospitals typically are less excited about per seats because they get out of compliance very quickly. And so it's challenging for them to maintain. But so we're looking to lock in, you know, 1 to 3 year contracts with these hospital systems. And then we work with each individual system, depending on how many users are going to be using it and what's the scope of the installation, to then price out per hospital per year. And then we sign those service agreements and those contracts with them.
Yep. So you're raising capital, a seed round, preferred equity. You've got a little bit left in the round. You started just a few months ago. Talk a little bit about the use of proceeds of this round, how much more theoretically you could take in.
Yeah, we're looking to raise up to, we're authorized by our board to raise up to $2 million. We have $500,000 raised already. And we are looking to do a couple of things. One, we need to build out our marketing team. We have a very small marketing footprint right now. You know, getting a hold of these hospital systems and getting into the right conversations with the right people is a heavy lift. So, you know, part of our go-to-market strategy here is being able to get in front of these right people to have the conversations and show them the data, show them the app, do the demo, and ultimately sign the deal. So that's part of it. The other piece here is we're looking to expand our product offerings. This includes adding additional calculators. This includes also expanding into some sister products that are really we're building on AI Medica platform. And so the piece of the platform we've been talking about mostly today is all around automating these risk scores like Adam described. But we've got some sister products here that are going to play with those risk scores in really interesting ways to help increase code capture and the accuracy of coding to drive reimbursement for hospital systems and create accurate representations of disease burdens across health systems. And some really interesting things that we can now do because we're practicing evidence-based medicine in the EHR, not outside of the EHR, right? And when evidence-based medicine predominantly now is practiced outside of the EHR, it makes it very, very difficult to say anything about how it's affecting your health system, right? Who's doing it? What are the scores? What's the distribution of those scores? What's the health of your patients look like, right? And as we transition more and more to value-based care, these tools are really, really valuable. So looking to build out the platform, that means we need to expand our dev team. So some of those proceeds, right, are going to go to our dev team, which incidentally, we have a really, really awesome setup for our dev team because we're a partner, we call it Duo Partners. They're a venture builder group out of Utah. They have a company in their portfolio called Resultier. One of the managing directors of the Duo Partners is the CEO of Resultier. They're a development firm. So we get at-cost development with them. All of our development's overseas, but they're very, very talented, proficient. You know, this is high-end development. Resultier has been a great, great partner for us to work with. So we get a really, really great deal on our development, which means that we get a big bang for our buck when we do development with them. So those are really our two big pieces there, right? We want to really build out our marketing sales strategy there. We need to onboard some folks there to help us do that, and also, you know, pay for some, you know, some conferences and be able to go get the word out, right, and attend some more podcasts, this type of stuff. But then also the development side of this, build out our dev team. We want to get a more robust group together that's going to be able to deliver on these larger initiatives outside of just the risk score product that we've built so far.
Love it. And what I'm hearing too is one way I would maybe describe this to somebody else is that you're an optimization layer. You're kind of turbocharging the existing products that are out there, which makes it very easy and seamless. It's not a whole new big lift. And I could almost see this becoming sort of, if your system doesn't have this and the guys across town do, so to speak, you're at a disadvantage because they've got a smarter system.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'd like to say one other thing on that. I mean, we operate from the hypothesis that if you broadly apply evidence-based practices across your health system, you'll have better patient outcomes and therefore lower cost of care. It's not with our initial tool, And as you mentioned, code capture is kind of a bugaboo for physicians. We hate it because we didn't go to school for training in this, and I really don't care. I couldn't care what I code my patient out. I just want to treat them and get them better and get them home. Right. And so it's always been somewhat of misaligned. So having a tool, and what we're talking about, these tools that kind of plug in the workflow, but also add in some coding information there, is a critical piece so you can align those two objectives, because we do need to have better code capture so we can keep the lights on in the hospital to provide care for the patients, but trying to get physicians to care about that, it's very difficult. And so how do you that? And our tools will merge those two worlds together and align those two incentives, which I think are which is kind of the power of the value proposition we're suggesting.
It's a great way to articulate that. And I love the fact that, Jordan, as you mentioned, you know, you're getting a big bang for your buck out of the development team. That's a big bonus right there. One of the challenges with any, I'll call it just digital health in general, company is the cost of customer acquisition, because, you know, time to sale is slow and on and on and on. And you mentioned, I think even before we started recording, it's not a technology problem. You know, this problem that's being solved, like you do have a technology layer here for sure, but a lot of what you're going to work up against is just the cost of sale. How are you guys, you know, other than working your own personal networks for the moment, how do you think about over the next 6-12 months as you start to get a little bit further out from your personal networks? What do you want to see in terms of that sale? And I'm also thinking the person listening to this, who would be the right person to say, you know what, that's us. I want to give, you know, Adam and Jordan a call.
Yeah. So the first part of your question, you know, how are we going to deal with the cost of customer acquisition? we've employed some interesting strategies. We've worked with some, we've been working with some people who have deep healthcare connections, and given, you know, we've worked out contracting deals with them where they basically become ambassadors or advocates for the company, and they have relationships with a lot of these folks. And so then it's a, you know, an equity / commissions deal, something along those lines that we negotiate out with them. And then they go and they work with the people that they have a rapport with, the trust with, who are our target clients, and help us, you know, land these conversations and get in with these health systems and start having conversations. That's been immensely valuable because it's allowed us to iterate and hone and fine tune the product. We started doing that really early. Like we started that process like when we barely had a tool. And so it created kind of a, you know, in a space where it's really tough to iterate really fast, that's helped us speed up our iteration time, because we get feedback really, really quick and from the target customer that we're looking for. So that's been really valuable. And those are starting to parlay into some really positive conversations that we're, you know, we're noticing that we're starting to get further and further down the pipeline. We're starting to get deeper and deeper into the conversation, closer and closer and closer to that product market fit where we'll ultimately sign a deal. We also had an interesting case where we've had a few people actually reach out to us and ask questions about working with us. In fact, we had a hospital system recently reach out to us from Toronto, Canada. This is the Sick Kids Children's Hospital. And I need to ask them how they discovered us, but they've reached out via our contact form on the website, and we connected with them, and they're doing some really, really exciting work around hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, where they're building calculators for children between the ages of 0 and 18 to predict the risk of sudden death. And so they came to us and they said, listen, we've won some grants and we're in, you know, we're working in this hospital. This is a physician researcher, physician scientist, right? And they've got an amazing operation of the research lab going on up there. But you know, they came to us and said, listen, we've built this tool, we've validated it, and now we want to study how we can integrate it into an electronic health record system. And they said, we're having a really hard time figuring this out. And I said, well, great, we can do it in a couple of weeks. So we started working with, you know, we've had a couple of cases like that where we've had people with this very specific problem where they've come to us and said, hey, we have this EHR integration pain, and it is a pain, right? That's difficult to figure out. Unless you know how to do it, it can be a real challenge. And so they've, you know, we've had a couple of people come to us in that capacity and say, we need help doing that. And that's something that we've been able to do because we've built a platform that allows us to plug and play risk scores. And we did that on purpose because we knew that there would be lots of other scores and calculators we would want to integrate. And this gives us tons of flexibility around the types of scores and calculators that we integrate into the electronic health record system.
I like it. Well, I want to wrap there so we can keep it short and sweet. We've been pretty clear. The group is looking to raise some capital. They've got a great product that every group that's using at this moment, Epic and eventually Cerner and others, ought to be taking a look at how to supercharge your electronic health records. And Adam, I love the description you gave, which is creating better alignment between these systems and the providers, which I'm very excited about that description in particular. Before we wrap, I want to open the floor. If there's anything in particular you guys feel like we missed that you want to share, feel free. The floor is yours.
Adam, do you want to maybe wrap up the last part of his previous question about who's our ideal client? If somebody listening to this would, you know, that's them, they'd want to reach out to us. Maybe you can speak to that a bit.
Yeah, so I think it's a couple. I was talking to Jordan. I've thought about this quite a bit when I first came up with this company on who would even use this tool and what would be the use case for it. I think the ideal customers are going to be, you know, first, I think there's an interesting opportunity for, I've talked to Jordan about this huge gap between time stuff happens in an academic setting to time it gets into the community hospital setting. There's this huge gap. I mean, I came from an academic setting. I practiced in a community hospital, and it's amazing how quickly I've fallen out of, you know, just fallen out of the current of new discoveries coming out there. So I think this is an interesting way of pushing information out from academic institutions to that. So I think academic institutions will have a huge interest to develop these tools in-house and see, as we're doing with the University of Toronto and the pediatric hospital there, how quickly they can see an impact and then hopefully really impact patients' lives. So I think that's the use case there. Community hospitals are looking at value-based systems, are looking to try to increase the outcome of their patients for lower cost. If you look at these calculators, that's really the biggest driver behind them is really that idea of how can we provide better care for a patient, which will at the end of the day result in lower cost of care for a given year of life for a patient. I think those are the two biggest use cases. I think the other use cases interesting is industry. So a lot of these industrial players in the healthcare space, they're looking to get their tools out there, their drugs or whatever, based off a certain stratified patient, right? Not every patient is going to be appropriate for in a given intervention, be it a cardiac cath or a medication. So interesting thing with our tools, we can implement some of these risk stratification, these risk calculators, so to speak, that would drive uptake of a certain medication or a certain procedure in the appropriate use case, obviously, using evidence-based tools. So I think those are your three use cases for something like this that I think can move the needle on the bottom line, but also, and more importantly to me as a physician, impact patients' lives.
Jordan, anything you want to add to that as we wrap up?
I think your questions were outstanding. They led me to say all the things that I wanted to say. So I think I'm good. Thank you so much, Tobin, for having us here. This has been an absolute pleasure.
Well, thank you guys. I'm really excited about what you're doing. You know, as I mentioned, this is a space I've been in for 20 some years. And when you see something that's interesting and clever out there, that's going to make an impact, it's you want to see it win. So
thank you so much.
See you again soon for the next episode of Innovation for Alpha. Make sure to go to Innovation for Alpha for access to prior episode links, show notes, and other valuable resources. This show is for entertainment purposes only. Before making any investment decisions, please consult with a professional. This show is copyrighted by Angel Indie Media, and written permission must be granted before syndication or rebroadcasting.